The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of CKLN Radio Incorporated. The following program contains views which some might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
They would be happy to put a warning on an album that said, explicit lyrics, parental guidance.
Let me ask you this. If we have categories and labels and rating systems for movies, why are you opposed to a similar rating system for records?
Well, if a person is hired as an actor for a film, whatever they rate the film doesn't hurt the actor as a person. He is a hired hand and he's pretending. If a person makes an album and he's written the song or he's performing the song and his name is on the album and his picture is on the album, if you rate the album, you're rating the person and you apply a stigma to that individual, and that's not fair.
As a regular radio listener, I feel I must protest most strongly as often as possible. Yours sincerely, Brigadier General Titfield Thunderbolt, MC, GPO, PVC, DSO, and Looney.
Yes, boss. Yes, boss. Yes, boss. Yes, boss. Police in helicopter. I search for marijuana. Policemen in the streets searching for cali weed. Soldiers in the field burning the cali.
So in essence, that's my voice, voicing out, leading to the community, sending all this positive energy and saying to all my people, let's make it a date and don't be late, man, because we are riding a momentum right now of forward movement in this globality, if there's such a word. I always tell them, say I'm a poet, so I can get away with making up some new words. Yes, I. So people, it's a globality right now, globality, because you see what's going on in terms of the revolutionary spirit, taking this organic stance to be on the top of everything, to be on the pinnacle. Now is the ideal time, because the world, as it is falling, it is also rising.
Yes, it is.
There's always a duality in life. And when we learn to accept both gracefully and without much resistance, then we definitely will discover what is beyond the unknown. You know, and the unknown is usually when you become beyond that fear, you know, beyond the fear that we all, the fear and the doubts and the insecurities and everything that we cherish and caress in our system, thinking that it's our prized possession, you know, but they're our worst enemy, all that fear and doubt and insecurities, you know.
You know what, I can't understand.
So when we surrender to all of these, then we will discover, we will earn the right to see and to experience what's beyond miserable
bravado
and glorious life that we are living all at once. You know, once we
bluster,
take away all that fear, we'll be at peace with ourselves. You know, and once we are at peace with ourselves, then we will see the beauty one to another.
This is pitiful.
Give thanks.
Yes, Empress.
Give thanks. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, man, my pleasure. It's a community of fear, you know, and boy, may I tell you the truth. I never know if I have so much joy and love in the community, you know, Rasta, until I put myself into the community, like, wholeheartedly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with me, I said, but sister, it's like, you get where you put in, you know?
Exactly.
If you don't the community, if you don't the community really and truly, How can you be at one with the community, you know?
Right.
And the community is only an extension of oneself.
Once more from the top.
Because there's an individual community, which is the person, you know? And within that one entity, you have many members of your body, many emotions, many moods that we have to deal with. So all of that could be considered activities that usually goes on into the regular community. But the metaphysical community, which is our unseen body, you know, the internal being.
God damn it, I don't understand it.
That's also a community, and the same effort and interest that we have to exercise.
Boy, this is ponderous, man. Ponderous.
To rally the wider community into oneness.
Number one.
We need to apply similar attention to our internal community and get ourselves together.
And they keep claiming that they're there to protect the people.
You know, and once we do that, then we can say, you know, yes, We are moving together, forward, movement together, and don't leave one single youth behind, not one single adult
not
behind.
Every one
of us going to move forward, because when we were transported from the continent of Africa,
the continent versus the country, when we talk about Africa there.
How many hundreds of years ago, they did not have any discussion to say, you know what, let us save these people, Lord have mercy on these. They all see us as one cargo and put us in that one ship, you know, and take us on that one journey. So let us remember that oneness.
Number one.
By which we survive this struggle. You know, we survive the struggle in a oneness, you know?
Number one.
Because the black blood is a link, you know, Empress. The black blood is a link, you know? We know it going on. We know it going on. Once you put black to anything, it's a vibration. But we only use branding because the language we know, you know? But we really want to talk about the universal colorlessness, you know what I mean?
You know what? I can't understand.
And the tastelessness and all these things. But we have to take care of home first.
Exactly.
So we have to talk about the melanin, you know, see it?
Right.
Because at the oneness melanin, you know, we're governing all the other melanin them in the Rasta.
Oh, yeah.
This is not a prejudicial thing or not an ego thing in a Rasta. It's that thing right now. The youth them are dead in the community, you know, see it? And people are losing their spirit, you know? So we're not going to talk like we are talking with doubt and water our mouth. We're going to talk with clarity. Yes, Empress, give thanks. I know the time I'll move on things, but blessed love, yeah?
Yes, give thanks.
All right, Empress.
Yes, give thanks. Really, give thanks for the moment.
All right, Malaya, love.
Love.
At this juncture, due to the clock time, we're going to have to terminate this very important and very interesting discussion. Before doing so, thank you for your contribution today.
Ladies and gentlemen, the opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of this station. We're gonna burn down the
cane fields if you continue. You've been detected and recorded. Leave immediately. The police are on the way.
I'm here. Just in time. Hey, I hear buzzing. Let me see where the buzzing is. There, it was on the turntables. We got buzzing on the turntables. But luckily, today, on this very program, we will not be using the turntables. Yes, I'm Greg Duffel, and welcome to the International Connection this morning. And it's a very special International Connection. Not like the special ER that was on either this week or next week. It's not like that. It's more special than that. It's a very special International Connection. I can't come off 1 centimeter off this microphone. Not 1 centimeter. I have to be right on it. It's a very special International Connection this morning because we have with us a very, very special guest. If I weren't doing something else right now, I'd play a fanfare. Okay, let's see whether we can get... Let's see. Oh, I hear something in there. Speak to me.
Word up, Greg.
Hey, you know who we have? You probably don't recognize this person who's on the phone with me right now. I'm so used to saying he's on the phone because he usually is on the phone. It's Dave 2. Dave 2 is actually in the studio right now. Dave 2, hello.
Hi, Greg.
Hey, Dave 2. Can you imagine that? So if you have questions for Dave 2 today, please phone in at 416-595-1655. That's 416-595-1655. Very busy morning this morning. I'm tired. Hey, let me take my coat off. Got up late this morning. Poor Dave 2 is waiting outside. Bye, Jeff. Hi. Looking for something?
Just double checking the room. That's
okay,
all.
That's good. It's always good to do that. Don't want to leave a coat behind and then have an email sent out saying you left your coat here.
No.
No.
Exactly.
It's embarrassing.
It sure is.
You know, you don't want to be leaving your stuff.
No, that's it.
Okay. You good?
I'm good.
All right. Okay.
Bye, Jeff.
Dave 2 said goodbye.
See you, Dave.
So, Dave 2, tell us about your little trip down here today. Tell us about how it went as I adjust things. Go ahead. It's all yours.
Well, besides the awful smell on the bus, everything was fine. Oh, and the cabbie nearly killed me on the way to the airport.
A what? Nearly killed you?
Well, I don't think he knew the route. There's a new road that goes around the airport. And,
yeah.
And it was pretty dark earlier this morning, and he was going too fast. And then all of a sudden we're in a four-wheel drift, and there's a guy coming on towards us. Well, somehow we made it.
You made it?
Yeah.
That's good. So you almost got killed.
Well, I don't know how close it was, but I think he was scared after he was finished with that.
Hmm. So how long did it take you to get down here? You came from quite a distance.
Probably about, both buses, probably about an hour, a little over an hour. It wasn't bad, you know. The cabbie thought he was going to take me all the way downtown, and I said, well, I'm not in that much of a hurry. And he said, where are you going? And I said, about, Young and Dundas. And he said, I could take you down there for $60. But I said, no, that's okay. I was trying to do it for about 20. Well, we were already at 25 at that point.
You weren't.
No, because he went the wrong way.
Did you?
He was asking me which way to go.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I said, well,
did you actually have to pay 25?
Yeah, that was his tip included, though.
Oh, my. Are you kidding me? From where you are to Terminal 1, where you picked up the bus?
Yeah. I think you have to go the long way around, Greg.
It was $25?
Yeah, and then I didn't give him a tip, though.
That is crazy. You're not that far from the airport, Dave, too.
Yeah, well, he wanted to bring me all the way down, though. I think he was starving a bit.
Well, I'm going to bring on our other guest. Our other special guest, and you know him. Some people like him, some people hate him. His name is, but that can be said for me, too. In fact, I think more people hate me than like me. Maybe not some of our listeners. It's hard to know. They'd have to phone in and tell me whether they hate me or like me. But we have Bob Dobbs is on the phone from Hawaii. Hello there, Bob.
Hey, Greg. This is CKLN Fiction, Dave Cooper.
Dave.
Bob can't make it.
Dave.
Bob knew Dave 2 was going to be on. He's got a question for Dave 2.
What is that? Is that a Twin Peaks reference? Isn't it? It's Dale Cooper, isn't it, Bob?
Yes, it's Dale Cooper on Twin Peaks. No, this is Dave Cooper. CKLN Fiction. CKLN Fiction. CKLN.
I don't know what you're talking about. But anyway,
okay.
Just as well, I don't know what you're talking about.
That's okay. So. It just helps people. This raises my profile. You know, Greg, you probably hated 80 to 20%. 80% hate you, 20% like you. I'm about 50-50.
Yeah? 50-50.
50% hate me, 50% like me. Yeah, but that's because I've been on the radio longer.
That's like American politics, right? There's 50% for McCain, 50% against McCain. Always
that's
split
it
down
always
the middle.
Is because there's only one person voting.
Right.
And that one person, the Android meme, has to talk to itself and compete with itself. It always will be 50-50.
Now, Bob, I have the clip here today that's so important to...
But I have a question, Greg, for Dave, too.
How do you know my last name?
Can I ask the question?
How does Bob know
ahead.
My last name,
you mean
though?
Two?
Dave, two. I have a question for you, which is, what community do you represent?
Well, I don't tie myself down to a particular community, Bob.
Good answer. Good answer.
I learned that from you.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, Greg, what do you want to present?
Oh, yes, Dr. Beter. We were talking about Dr. Beter last week, and I thought we'd continue on. Because, I do have this this week, Bob. Just so if you need this clip at any time, don't hesitate to ask. Here it is.
Hitler was entirely a radio man.
All right.
I'd say that Mao Zedong was a community man.
So we have the Dr. Beter. Now, last week we were talking about Dr. Beter. And Dr. Beter, as for those of you that weren't here last week and weren't here last week at this time, perhaps, because we discussed Dr. Beter later. Dr. Beter was, well, why don't you explain who he was, Bob? You explain it in your own words, what Dr. Beter, who he was.
Okay, Dr. Beter was born on June 21st, 1921. During World War II, he would be in his early 20s. He worked in the Chicago area in military intelligence, so he made his contacts really early, just by coincidence. Then he went to university. I don't know where he went to university, but he became a lawyer, and he did yeoman work down on the docks of Washington, D.C., where he helped people without any money. This is an illegal, like a legal aid thing. And he got involved with the gold world and the early committee for space exploration in Washington, whatever scientists or pilots want to go into space. So those two things, early involvement with space and with the American Gold Association, which he became president of in the 60s, led him make important contacts in Washington in late 50s, early 60s. And then when the Export-Import Bank was set up, I guess under the President Kennedy's administration, and he was a prominent Democrat from West Virginia. He was born in West Virginia and then educated in Chicago. So here he is in the early 60s, and the Export-Import Bank was received an application from some Japanese businessmen. And the generals on the Export-Import Bank committee turned them down. Dr. Beter knew these Japanese, and they asked him to appeal to the committee. And he told them, these people will commit harakiri. They will kill themselves. They cannot go back to Japan without any success. So he managed to persuade the generals there to allow Japan to be to receive the largesse from the Export-Import Bank in the early 60s, and, of course, that started Japan on the way to their dominance by the late 80s, early 90s.
Now, what we
and so they always were grateful to Dr. Beter.
Now, of course, Dr.
So that's
Beter.
Interesting what he did.
So, Dr.
Then in the 1967, he ran for governor of West Virginia, and he ran, I think, on the Democratic ticket. And during that, he was told that he had to, fess up $250,000 to be even registered on the computers, the early voting machines they had there. So he had an independent spirit, and he rebelled against that, and he dropped out and ran for independent. And those constituencies that didn't have voting machines, he did well, and those that did have machines, he did nothing. So he went to Zaire and got involved with the mining of gold there. And in the course of it, British intelligence got in touch with him in 71, 72, and told him there were some problems in the Rockefeller cartel in the United States, and he should write a book about it. So he wrote the book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar, in 1973. He got publicity from that, got reviewed, and because he was a prominent American and was in who's who in America, And then he exposed that there was no gold in Fort Knox, and agitated enough to get a Senate committee investigating it. And he reports in detail later on his audio letters what happened. They went to the Fort Knox. The senators presented a fake investigation, and he was angry. So he went further, and we're going to play an example of how far he went.
What a maverick that guy was. Now,
yeah,
of course,
a great man for me. Great friend, and, you know, if you read my diaries, Android Memes and Arkin, you will see that I was part of the British intelligence team that told him about the problem in Fort Knox. So I have a special relationship with him.
Now,
I'll add this, Greg. Let me add this.
No.
So when he stopped doing his tapes in 1982, after making several predictions, accurate predictions, including the stepping down of Brezhnev, the Brezhnev double, and the first replacement of Brezhnev was Andropov. He predicted that. He also predicted Sadat's assassination on a tape just a few weeks before that on October 6, 1981, which is also Bob Marshall's birthday, October 6, 1981. And, well, I better not mention that person. The other
No, don't do that.
Yeah, and then, so he retired doing that in 82, and he got involved with finding gold for Buckingham Palace. The Queen had $14 billion, and was interested in acquiring some gold because they're worrying about the economic situation in the early 80s. And he did that till December 14th, 1986, and then I teamed up with him and helped him with that and got involved with that stuff. And actually, there's a Who's Forgotten for a Lit Part 2, which you have, which we could play, a segment where I taped me and Dr. B.
That'll have to be for another week, Bob. That'll have to be for another week. Now,
okay.
I have a question.
And then he died on March 4th, evening of 13th into the 14th, 1987, and I called up Mike Hansen at CKLN at 3 in the morning when I heard about it, and Mike had the honor of announcing that Beter was no longer with us.
Wow, that was a lot more information than I think we ever even anticipated or wanted. But now, of course, Dr. Beter was lying to the Japanese when he told the authorities in the United States they were going to commit Harry Caray, right?
Oh, no, that was true. That's what the Japanese do. They can't screw up in business, especially important thing. Here's Japan trying to get into the global economy in the early 60s, and they have to go through the Export-Import Bank, and they were being turned out. So these guys stayed in their hotel,
and
they wouldn't go back.
Huh. Okay, here's...
Anyways, the generals believe Dr. Beter.
Okay, this is going to be a little recap of what happened last week. This is Dr. Beter, Dr. Peter Beter. This is in March 28th, 1979, revealing the secret of the...
May 28th.
Was it May? Okay, so May 28th, 1979. Here he is talking about a very, very amazing thing, a secret that he has to reveal to the world.
What I am about to reveal, I am revealing primarily for history. I know, even before I reveal it, that some of my listeners will desert me after they hear it, saying, it just cannot be. But, my friends...
What kind of listeners would desert Dr. Beter after they hear about this? I'd want to hear more. He must think he has very conservative listeners that would want to leave after they're going to hear what you're about to hear right here on this radio program.
I also know that the events in the days ahead will be impossible to understand without knowing this secret.
Oh, hold on. I have a caller on the phone that I've almost forgotten about. I'm going to put them on right now just in case they have something to say before this amazing revelation. You're on the air.
Why did they shoot General Brown's double, who never even came to life? That's the part that doesn't make sense, eh?
I mean, I'm glad you were listening so carefully last week. General, what was his name? Shackley, or...
I thought you were trying to fool Elkie here, you know?
No.
Because the rest of the story makes sense, and then you slip that in.
Well, they didn't shoot... they created another... No, they created a double.
A double-double.
Yeah, that was a human double.
A fake double.
Yes, that wasn't what we're going to hear about now. This was a human double that somehow they sent abroad and they shot. Yeah,
after Brown was assassinated.
This is General George Scratchley Brown. General George Scratchley Brown, who died...
Yeah, but he says he shot the double in the neck.
Right.
Listen closely. Brown was assassinated. You may have been describing him.
Okay, but just listen carefully. We'll go over... There's more to come.
Lord Selector was right, eh?
Lawrence.
No, that's another reference. Bob wouldn't know. I know Lawrence Selector.
Oh, no, he knows.
I worked with him in the early 80s, well, middle 80s at CKLN.
Oh, yeah, you worked with me too, didn't you?
No, I don't know you.
Oh, there's someone you don't know. Okay.
You sound like an old caller, but, yeah, maybe due to age, you look like an older version of a caller back in the late 80s.
Oh, you can see me through the Winkysphere. on the blitzoscope.
The kissoscope.
Yeah, yeah. We're getting an update on that, are we?
Yes, we will get an update on that. Yes.
Okay, I'll wait for that then.
Yeah, aren't you lucky?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, what was he saying there? I can confirm here that our own Bob Dobbs actually spoke to Dr. Beter, and it isn't a fake call. It's a real call with Dr. Beter, a telephone call that happened in the 80s. And
well, it was in 86, early 87, during the gold deal.
Yeah, yeah, I got it. I'll bring it in if there needs to be proof that Bob actually does know Dr. Beter or knew him, at least enough to speak to him on the phone. So here we go. We're carrying on with the revelation. It happened last week. For those of you that listened, I guess this is dull, but here it is. I just need to bring the listeners up to date. Here we go.
So I do not ask that you believe it, simply because I say it. What I do ask, and I ask it for your own good, is that you keep an open mind. Listen and hear what I must now reveal. Then watch events themselves.
All right. Okay, here it is.
In Russia as well as in the West, research has been underway for many years in biological synthesis, that is, artificial life forms. And according to high intelligence, a stunning breakthrough took place in Russia some years ago. The Russians refer to this breakthrough as a providential discovery, something they learned almost by accident. They discovered the key to creating what are known as organic robotoids. An organic robotoid is an artificial robot-like creature. It looks and acts exactly like a human being, and yet it is not human. A robotoid is alive in a biological sense, but it is an artificial life form.
All right, so Dr. Beter reveals that the Bolsheviks, the Russians, have created what's called an organic robotoid. And this robotoid, if you have it near the person that needs to be made a robotoid of, will make an almost exact double of them, but it's a living creature. And Dr. Beter's presented to us last week from 1979, from beyond his grave, he presented the idea that he wishes to have everyone have an open mind about, that Jimmy Carter, his wife Rosalind, their daughter Amy, Jimmy's mother Lillian, and another person, another Carter, and maybe even Billy Carter, were all dead. And so that means that the Jimmy Carter and Rosalind Carter that we see walking around today are not the Jimmy Carter and Rosalind Carter of the 70s or the early 70s. They're dead. They've been replaced. Now, in the late 70s, Dr. Beter, or in the early 80s, Dr. Beter puts forward the premise that they were replaced by robotoids under the control of Moscow. Now, not only that, but
that's Bolsheviks, Greg.
That's that. that. So, and there, not only were there the robotoids are unstable, and they sometimes have to be remade, reprogrammed. Sometimes Nelson Rockefeller, for instance, was made a robotoid, and he started getting confused about certain policy issues and had to be brought back to Moscow and or taken to Moscow and reprogrammed in some way. They're unstable. They sometimes they don't live very long. And so this was the premise put forward by Dr. Beter, the secret, something that he had to tell the public, tell the people in his audio letters. So we went through all of the running around in the late 70s with the Israeli-Arab peace deals and so on, the shuttle diplomacy. Here, we did all that. Rockefeller's going all over the place. The multiple Jimmy Carters, the Jimmy Carter II, Jimmy Carter III. So now here we pick it up with the plots of the Russians, which include the Robotoids. This is what the Russians are involved in and how diabolical their plans really are and how far ahead they were back in the late 70s.
That, my friends, is exactly what Russia has been doing now for nearly 3 years. Underwater missiles, charged particle beam weapons, killer satellites, cosmospheres, and the moon bases, and now organic Robotoids. But a Harold Brown Robotoid was in Moscow.
Hold on,
May 13th.
I missed one here.
But then one Robotoid is as good as another.
Mm-hmm.
Carter Robotoids began lobbying on Capitol Hill immediately for the treaty. One Robotoid at a time, of course.
As the treaty, this is the SALT II treaty now. This is the SALT II treaty between Russia and the United States about interballistic missiles and so on.
But a Harold Brown Robotoid was in Moscow on May 13 and 14 and arrived in Tehran on the 15th. The next day he went to Jerusalem, where he joined Paisley in the number 2 Jimmy and Rosalind Carter Robotoids.
Now, it's interesting how they have to keep the Jimmy and Rosalind number 2 Robotoids together. They don't seem to mix up, let's say, Jimmy Carter number 2 with Rosalind number 3. Did you notice that, Bob? And Dave too?
Yeah,
there's no mixing and matching going on. Those two Robotoids are very tied to one another.
Isn't Robotoid 1 dead or malfunctioning?
Well, we don't hear much about Robotoid. Well, I think he refers maybe to Jimmy Carter number 1 being the real Jimmy Carter. I don't think he ever said Jimmy Carter Robotoid number 1 or number 2. Or number 1, rather. He never said number 1. I'm getting confused with the story. I don't think he ever said number 1. But
okay.
Anyway, let's carry on. I've only heard about number 2 and 3 and sometimes 4. But here we go.
Thus began the second Middle East Cosmosphere shuttle involving Robotoids.
So all this shuttling back and forth, shuttle diplomacy that we saw, that we witnessed on television mainly in the late 70s, was all Robotoids. We were seeing Robotoids, according to Dr. Beter. Now, here's someone who they had a really hard time making a good Robotoid out of, and that was Cyrus Vance, who I think was the Secretary of State under Jimmy Carter. So, anyway, here's the story of Cyrus Vance, according to Dr. Beter.
At the same time, it was announced that Secretary of State Vance was to leave right away on a 2-week trip overseas. Reportedly, Vance was to be going first to London and several other points. But the real destination of the current Vance Robotoid, number 3, was Tehran. As I explained last summer in Audio Letter 37, Iran is an indispensable key to the Bolshevik plan for a nuclear first strike against Russia. The Bolsheviks, as they see their power slipping, are making a feverish attempt to go ahead with the first strike plan. The Vance Robotoid was sent to Iran to gather information and to seek ways to foil the first strike plan. He arrived early, May 22nd, in Tehran, but less than 30...
May 22nd, Bob.
Yes.
36 hours later, the Vance Robotoid was killed, shot in the head.
Oh.
It was less than 36 hours later that another Vance Robotoid arrived in Tehran. Cyrus Vance, number 4. But that one lasted only a few hours before being gunned down on the morning of May 25th.
Boy, you can't keep those Robotoids together. But, I mean, they were... Actually, I got it wrong. The Robotoids were holding up. It was just they kept getting killed. There were assassins coming in and constantly murdering the Robotoids. It's astounding. Okay, here we go. Here's the Pope.
And very early this month, the actor Pope, the Bolshevik double for the late Pope John Paul II, was eliminated, along with his Bolshevik boss, Cardinal Benelli. Both have been replaced by doubles from Russia, but the evidence is not yet clear as to whether these doubles are human or Robotoid.
He doesn't know. It's very difficult to tell whether the doubles that you see, and we're seeing a lot of them evidently back then, and maybe all the way through. And, you know, in the newspapers, they would always report about Saddam Hussein doubles. There were even George Bush doubles. Often when they would land a plane, there would be several people that looked like George Bush that would get off the plane first, and then finally, one of them might be George Bush.
The very Pope that had Pope stocks all over Toronto over the last few decades, he was a double.
Yeah. Well, according to Dr. Beter.
Yep.
So there you have it. That's the end of, for now anyway, of audio letter number 46, all of the references I could find that I thought were germane to the Robotoid story. I felt it was important for me to use this platform that I have to inform the general public, a new generation, of the existence perhaps in the past and maybe today of Robotoids. If you've thought that some people that you work with, that you have to deal with, are unreasonable, unpleasant, not seeming to be able to do things for you when you ask, seemingly reasonable things that you might request, if they seem to be against you, things that you say, so on.
Those are Robotoids?
Well, I'm opening up the possibility that maybe they are Robotoids. No, that
I think they're everywhere then.
Yeah, I guess maybe you're right. I do notice that myself. I'm just trying to figure out why there's such incredible resistance to me in particular, actually. Maybe these people are Robotoids. Maybe these things that we're having to interact with and deal with are not human. And
no, Greg, they're not. They're not Robotoids.
Oh, okay.
Robotoids, remember, since I knew Beater and was working with the Secret Council of Ten, I actually saw a dead Robotoid.
Oh, my heavens.
Okay, in about 81.
Were they naked? Were they clothed and dead, or were they...
They were clothed.
Yeah.
And it might have been the Carter one. I can't remember exactly, but what struck me is they were kind of clay-like.
Mm.
There was a pallor in the skin. It wasn't... you could tell it was something wrong with the person. And I was seeing a dead one, so maybe that was a thing.
Well, I mean, a dead human looks a little evidently like clay. Remember that with Hands Like Clay? Remember that song?
Yes, yes. Yeah. No, the thing is they were dead, but they weren't ashen or pale like a human dead person, which I've seen many of. Something different.
Of course you have.
It was like putty or clay. But the point is that they were only used for a couple of years, and then, as I've said before in your show, once Reagan came in and television's image became even stronger, early high-definition TV, they didn't need actors or doubles. They had actors. So they had Reagan. His hypnosis as a major communicator served all the purposes. And people were not as literate in the early 80s, middle 80s, and they didn't have these... characteristics or talents. So most people that you're talking about are doubles. They're not. They don't use Robotoids anymore.
No. They're. Why? Why wouldn't they use them? Because they just
weren't. Because the TV hypnosis was bigger. Remember Reagan, an actor becomes president. That stunned people enough, and they were fascinated by this image, and that was good enough. And there was less and less people running the show. Back then, you're talking about the battle between the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and the Zionists, and the Bolsheviks, all intertwined for 100 years. And that's why, once that got resolved with the shooting of Reagan in March 30th, 31st, 1981, and then the next double was put in, it was really a small team. And basically, it was Bolsheviks who were in the Pentagon. And the Pentagon had been controlling America since then. And then the Russian, according to Dr. Beater, and what I had to deal with, is that the Russian Skopskis, native Russians, kicked the Bolsheviks out in the late 70s, and that's what the scurrying about is what he's detailing. They took over the Pentagon. The Russian Skopskis teamed up with the Rockefellers, and as the 90s unfolded, what do we hear about? We hear about the Russian mafia and the Russian mob running the oil business. That is the Bolshevik cartel. And on the business level, they're based in Brooklyn. That's where a big Russian exile community is. That's Bolsheviks. So the bad Russian businessmen we've heard about for 20 years are the Bolsheviks exiled from Moscow. And Moscow's been in a very powerful position since then, and they had to deal with the banking being controlled by the Bolsheviks, so they didn't have any money, but now they're back.
Well, Bob, I'm afraid I have to tell you that we have more plugs and more announcements to play during this program. They just increase exponentially over time. So we're going to go to that, and we'll be back in a few minutes, I suppose.
Organic.
Hitler was entirely a radio man.
CKLN's annual general meeting takes place on Sunday, November 23rd, 6 p.m. at the Elmo Combo, 464 Spadina Avenue at College.
This meeting is open to all community members, current full-time resident students, and volunteers in good standing. To qualify as a community member, you must have made a minimum pledge of $50 during Fund Fest 2008 and paid it by October 27.
That's CKLN's annual general meeting, November 23rd, 6 p.m. at the Elmo Combo, 464 Spadina Avenue at College.
The Banana Split Club will now come to order. Quiet! Order! Quiet! Order! Order! Order!
Hey, Flig, why all the yelling? We didn't say a word.
Oh, I'm sorry. You guys are usually talking when I call the club to order.
Yeah, well, this time we're as quiet as a mouse, right, Bingo?
Right, Trooper. Quiet as three little mouses.
Hi there. Did you send for the mouse exterminator?
The views expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect the views of CKLN Radio Incorporated. Listener discretion is advised.
Of course, it's all about Obamamania. Yes.
Yeah, it's all about Obamamania. And remember...
Who's that, Greg?
What?
Who's that last voice?
That's Tanya Kim.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
She's still on TV?
She's still on TV.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I could...
Does she kind of look like Jeannie Becker or those people you see on TV?
She doesn't look like a Jeannie Becker. No, she doesn't look like Jeannie Becker at all. She's Korean.
Oh, yeah.
She would be Korean.
Oh, yeah.
She's of Korean descent. And, yes, Tanya Kim.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, where are my Tanya Kims?
Here,
I'll find them. I'll find my Tanya Kims.
Oh, yeah.
Daniel were here. He'd be right on top of these Tanya Kims.
But, yeah, is Tanya Kim a real big personality in Toronto?
Well, she has a program that talks about entertainment. It's called E-Talk. And so she appears on this program, and that is her presence, I suppose. And she winks at you and waves at you and she's on CTV and she's on all their other stations. And she's with Ben Mulrooney, so she's all hooked in.
You mean CTV?
CTV. Yes, CTV.
No. CTV.
Yeah, it's like that. Like that.
Well, there was Erica M. And do they have new people like that? Or she's the new version
actually,
of Erica M?
She used to be at Much Music. I know way too much about Tanya Kim. She used to be at Much Music, but she was a videographer, I think. She ran around with a camera. And then somehow she got picked up to be an on-air personality at CTV. Now, interestingly, as you may remember, Bob, I uncovered secret audio that has been buried for years of Tanya Kim right here at this very station, doing announcements, promos, things like that.
Yes.
So she has her origins here at Ryerson University, and I thought she just shunned this place, like so many students do. But some don't even know it exists. But and some are just sent packing, told, oh, no, this isn't a radio station. This is a utility room. But that was in the past. So, Tanya Kim actually did do work here for, at least a few months. From what I can gather, she was, I found quite a few tapes of Tanya Kim.
Well, are you CKLN's archivist?
Well, you're Marshall McLuhan's archivist, aren't you?
Yes. Well, I'm not putting you down. I'm just wondering, technically, you seem to have everything. Have you always been an archivist of CKLN?
I've done a lot of archiving. I mean, I archived your program, didn't I?
I mean,
there were other people. I wasn't the only one who had the idea to archive your program. But as we found out, and they got their archive tapes to you. But I had my own set of tapes of the old Bob Dobbs program. So,
how did you get the Tanya Kim stuff?
That's on quarter-inch audio. It was here at the station. Everybody had no one wanted to do anything with it. No one was actually actively getting any of the people who volunteer here to do that. And I saw this stuff sit around at the other place. Maybe some of it got thrown away or whatever. I don't know. I don't know how much was retained, but there was a certain amount retained in boxes. And finally, I just said, "Can I take this stuff? I've got professional audio equipment at home. I'll take it and I'll archive it all. I'll digitize it so that it can be part of the archive here at the station. So for everybody to use if they ever found out about it or had access to it. So I'm in the process of doing that. I had a little stop for a while, but I'm back on it.
Are you appreciated for doing this?
No.
Well, I'll let Dave too have the opinion for that. I don't know how he would know, but you think no, you think not, right?
Well, Dave too. I'm just comparing it to the other unappreciated things that go on.
Well, that's okay. I have an interest in this myself, so that's what
I do. That matters, Greg.
Yeah, that's all that matters. I have an interest. So
hi, Spy, and hi, Ral.
What? What was that?
Hi, Spy, and hi, Ral. I'm doing a shout-out, Greg.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Clint.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Do they have businesses to plug or anything? Are there any businesses that could be plugged on the air? Because so many other businesses are.
Yeah, I think Ral is affiliated with Pronto.
Okay.
Pronto Movers.
Right.
And Spy, I'm not sure about. He's near Edmonton, so it might not matter.
Actually, we might have a listener. We had a listener phoned in. I believe that they were in either Edmonton or in northern Alberta. Alberta. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's where that eco disaster is going on, isn't it?
Which one is that?
The one in Alberta with the oil sands.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But we might be saved. They might be saved from that because the oil price is going down so much.
Right, they'll stop production.
Yeah,
and Clint has. I think he runs Reflector and Campus Hoodies.
Hmm. All right. Okay. Well, thank you. That's good. It's nice to. It makes it like most of the other programs to have plugs for things.
Yeah, I can get some free
unnecessary.
Moving.
Unnecessary. What?
I can get some free moving and some free promotional goods now.
Good.
I might be able to get my car worked on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, that's the whole point, isn't it? All right. So so we've done that.
Hey, great.
Yeah.
Great. You know, Dave Cooper, the CKLM Fiction, keeps sending me articles and. And there were some recent articles a couple months ago on CKLN and some kind of uproar. And there's there are competing staff or boards or management. What happened? Has it ever been decided who is the management of CKLN?
I'm not clear.
Okay, you're not clear because I can't make it out from the articles.
I think I don't know. It's just I keep a watch on it. Don't worry, Bob. I'll give you once I've got it all figured out. I'll get in touch with you.
Doesn't Bob know we're not allowed to talk about that?
No, he doesn't. But it isn't evidently in the listener handbook.
Well, we were allowed to talk about it 20 years ago.
Okay. You weren't?
We were.
Oh, okay.
But we didn't have a handbook.
That's true. But you see, the thing is, there's a programmer's handbook, but not a listener handbook.
Yeah, well, on the album, Bob's Ecology, made by Dave Neufeld, which immortalized my period of CKLN, there was a phrase looped in it, and it said, station managers may come and go, but there's always Bob.
Right. Well, that's true. You know, we're heading up.
I just got an email from Arella. Do you remember Arella, Greg?
Arella?
Arella was maybe 40 times. She's a famous, she became a famous Queen Street, downtown personality, but she was a very popular DJ at CKL in the middle 80s.
Well, I kind of.
She was one of the first let go, under the old crummy management. The Adam Vaughn regime.
Yeah.
And I just got an email from her right now.
Really? And
yeah,
why?
I got my computer.
What, is she listening?
Backup.
Is she listening?
Let's see. She says,
yeah.
I sent her of my...
Bob.
She writes,
yeah.
She writes back, that is great. What does Sarah Palin look like? She really scares me just because she's so popular and so ambitious. Glad to see these videos. I think you're on the money.
Well, why don't you?
My YouTubes are fantastic.
Well, why don't you write back to her right now and tell her to tune in?
It just came in. It's 4:03, AM my time.
Bob.
Say, tune on.
Bob.
Turn on. CKLN.
Yeah. Okay. You do that. Yeah. Okay, Bob's writing the email. Now, the story I've been wanting to get to, actually, I'm just going to go to these commercials because let's just get them done early. Oh, God. Let's just get them done early. Do it live. Let's do these.
Do it live!
Do that again.
Do it live!